This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Here's something you probably didn't learn in history class. In the days leading up to the founding of our nation, there was a conspiracy to kill George Washington. Many historians are aware of this fact, but there's not a lot of information to support it. But that didn't stop Brad Meltzer. When he saw the reference in a footnote by Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Joseph J. Ellis, Meltzer couldn't shake it from his mind. So he collaborated with John Mensch to discover the history behind that footnote. The result is Meltzer's first work of nonfiction, The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. I visited with Meltzer about this new look at our nation's past and how it can inform our present and future. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. So we spoke last year about your latest thriller, The Escape Artist, and you're known for your thrillers and for your shows on the History Channel, Decoded and Lost History. This is your first work of nonfiction, but it could almost be qualified as a thriller, too, I feel like. The First Conspiracy is about a little-known piece of American history, and that is the plot to capture and kill George Washington. How did you discover this little piece of history?
I found this story nearly a decade ago in the place where all good stories hide, which is in the footnotes. And I remember seeing, you know, it said that there was a secret plot to kill George Washington. And I remember thinking, is this real? Is this fake? Is it some internet nonsense? What is it? And it was real. In 1776, there was a secret plot to kill George Washington. When George Washington found out about it, he brought together those responsible, rounded them up, built a gallows, and he took one of the main co-conspirators, hanged him in front of 20,000 people. It was the largest public execution at that point in North American history. And I just remember being so taken with that story and going, I need to find out if, you know, what the story is behind it. 5 years went by, and I still couldn't shake it. And I went to Pulitzer Prize-winning author Joseph Ellis. And I said to him, do you know this story that, you know, wrote one of the great Washington biographies? I said, you know this story about the plot to kill Washington? And he said, I know the story. He said, but here's the thing, Brad. This is a story about George Washington's spies. And you can find today all of George Washington's. You can find every slave he owned. You can find the exact number of slaves he owned. You'll never find all of his spies. He said, by its nature, what you're searching for will forever be elusive. But he said, you got to try, because if you try and it works, you're going to get a book out of it. If not, you'll have a great adventure. And so that was where the First Conspiracy, you know, first started taking hold. And I said, we got to do this as the first nonfiction book.
So why don't more people know about it?
Well, part of the reason is, of course, because of the fact that it was Washington's spies who were ferreting the plan out, and their job is to keep quiet. The second part of it is George Washington just played everything so close to the vest. You know, he wasn't like John Adams or Thomas Jefferson, where he was writing his feelings every single day and you knew everything he thought. On the day when the hanging happened, right, he murders a man in front of 20,000 people, and he barely mentions it in his diary. If I killed someone in front of 20,000 people, I'd be like, dear diary, had a bad day, had a heart, you know, whatever you might say. And the third reason, I think the biggest one why you don't know about it, is that the hanging itself happened on June 28th, 1776. Now, guess what else is happening in the world on June 28th, 1776, right? You got the Declaration of Independence. The first draft of it is being handed in. You have the British are literally coming. With headlines like that, even though this hanging was huge, the hanging itself becomes just a footnote to history. It goes below the fold forever. And that's why no one knows about it.
So how do you research something like this that was meant to stay a secret?
Yeah, and it's not like it was a secret where, oh my gosh, no one should know. The truth is, if any good Washington biography has a mention of this, you'll see it in a footnote, a sentence, a paragraph or two, maybe a page and a half at the most. And then there's a couple things that have maybe written a little longer. But when you go to research this, you got to go back, of course. I was where we couldn't find anything. What cracked it open for us is I went to my friend Josh Mensch. We did a TV show called Lost History together on the History Channel, where we helped find the 9/11 flag that the firefighters raised at Ground Zero in that famous photograph. The flag went missing. We were able to help return it. And Josh was our best researcher and writer, is an award-winning documentarian. And I said to him, you know, you want to come down this rabbit hole with me. I want to research the plot against Washington. And what really broke open, at least for me, was when we found the actual records from the secret tribunal that tried the man who eventually got hanged. Because what happened was, is when George Washington found out what was going on, he created a secret committee. And the secret committee was led by John Jay, who later became the first Supreme Court justice. At this time, though, he was put in charge of figuring out what was going on. They were kicking in doors and doing late-night raids, pulling out suspects, interrogating them. And what they were really doing in the process of that is they were building America's first counterintelligence agency. People think that the CIA, that the precursor to the CIA is the OSS. It's not. It's this moment right here with John Jay and the Committee on Conspiracies right around the time of the plot against George Washington. In fact, right now in CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, to this day, there is a room dedicated to John Jay, who they call the founding father of counterintelligence. And that, to me, is how the plot kind of comes out. And what happens is we were able to find the transcripts of the secret tribunal when they found the guy who was in on it. And one of the things that was great is they swore people in. They gave testimony. And most important, there was someone who was taking a transcript of the whole thing. And once we had that, we were like, oh my gosh, here's parts of what happened. We know exactly who was where on what date. And then you can really kind of expand from there.
Tell me, who are the lifeguards?
So George Washington, at the beginning of the war, had his own personal bodyguards. And he asked all of his regiments, he said, give me your four best men. He asked for what they call drilled men, the best of the best, certain height, certain build, even certain virtues. And Washington himself, George Washington personally narrowed it down to about 50 people. They became the commander's guard. They called them the governor's guard. But the name that really stuck were the lifeguards, because part of their job was to guard George Washington's life. And these were the men who turned on him. These were the ones who were involved in the plot against George Washington. And I don't care that you become the greatest general. I don't care if you become the first president. I don't care how strong you are. It is a moment that is devastating to George Washington.
I was also going to ask, because you mentioned doing research with Josh, how was the experience of writing with a partner?
You know, I could say I didn't know what was happening, but we had done this on the TV show together. And the reason, you know, Josh had never written a book before I called him up, and the publisher was sending me all these really well-known writers to say, hey, you want to work with this one and this one and this one? And they just didn't have that voice that worked with me. And I think that when you're writing a book with someone else, it's like you're in a band together. You have to find someone you can harmonize with. And you have to find that perfect pitch for you. And when Josh and I worked on Lost History together, searching for lost historical artifacts, he and I would just complete each other's sentences. We would send things back and forth. It was just so seamless. I said, you know what? This is going to be who I really should work with. And when I called him, he said to me, I've never written a book before. And I said, well, at some point I hadn't either, but I know you're going to be able to do it. We're going to do it together. And I think what was so great is, you know, he was just such an incredible researcher. He's a great, wonderful writer. And then, you know, he would do the first draft, and then when I would come in, it wasn't having to rewrite everything, but, you know, we just really understood each other, and I can take it and say, no, let's not put the bad guys in the end of the book. Let's put them in the front. Let's foreshadow here. Let's move this around. And I would write cliffhangers. And, you know, it was just this thing where I know it sounds silly, but it kind of just became this truly one person starting the note, and then you couldn't even figure out which of us was going to finish it. We just really paired up well.
You know, I don't even qualify as an armchair historian, but I found myself so amazed to learn new things. I didn't realize Washington didn't go home at all during the entire Revolutionary War, for one. Or, you know, that story that you uncovered about the deadly peas. How did you and Josh determine what to include? I saw in the acknowledgments where you said that he had the ability to just choose what nuggets to polish and display. But how did you two go about choosing? I mean, I found them fascinating. Did you just include what you found fascinating as well, in addition to the whole story?
I've been at this 20 years now. And the one thing I know is I'm not that special. And if I find something really cool, there's going to be a lot of people that also think, you know what, that's pretty cool too. And Elmore Leonard, to paraphrase one of the masters of writing, used to say that one of the jobs for a good book is you got to put in all the good parts and take out all the parts that people don't want to read. Hmm. And the one thing that Josh and I always agreed on is what the good parts are. So I remember finding, you know, we were talking about, there's a scene in the book where you'll see that one of the first things George Washington does when he's they give him control of the army is he starts ordering books. And they're books on how to be a better general. They're on military strategy. I'm like, we need to know what books they are. Then he orders himself a blue sash. He's like, there's no time to make a new uniform. He's now in control and the commander of the army. So he says, give me a blue sash on his old uniform and everyone will know he's in charge. And so it's little details that you really can figure out and see what this man is doing. Because George Washington is the most famous American, arguably, who ever lived. But what's so crazy is we know the least about him. We see him on the dollar bill every day, but as a person, we know the least about him in terms of his personality. And in those moments, you can see him trying to figure out, you know, when the first thing you do is order a bunch of books, it's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength and wanting to do better, but it shows you just how unconvinced he is that he's up to this task. He doesn't say, arrive and say, I'm the one who can fix it all. He comes and immediately says, we got work to do. Mm-hmm. Let's learn. Let's educate ourselves. Let's be good at this. And those were the details that got to me. One of my favorite moments in the entire book is at the Battle of Brooklyn. And it's George Washington. You know, we always tell the story. We take our heroes today in America and we dip them in granite and we build statues of them. And we do a complete disservice to them and their stories. Because every person you look up to, every hero in your life, whether it's famous ones like George Washington or Rosa Parks or Dr. King or anyone else in your family, had moments where they were scared and they were terrified and they didn't think they could go on, but they continued to push forward. And George Washington in the Battle of Brooklyn doesn't save the day. We get our butts kicked. He gets out-generaled. George Washington doesn't have the experience of the British generals, and he has this moment where he's pinned down. He's got the British in front of him. He's got the East River behind him. He should be dead. This is the end. And instead, George Washington does that thing he always does best. He adapts. He plans a daring escape in the middle of the night. He gets and commandeers all the boats along the East River. And one by one, he slowly hides his men and puts them into the boats. Fog comes in, and under cover of fog, slowly, one by one, they get in the boats and go to safety. But here's the key moment, is George Washington himself won't get in any of the boats until all of his men get aboard and are away safely. They see him risking his own life for theirs. And not that that's the magic moment that brings the country together, but there are plenty before and plenty after. I will say, though, that that's where we come together as a people. We're a completely divided country even back then. And there was no United States back then. George Washington helped build it, and he built it with his character. And I love in this book that you get to see the secret plot against George Washington, but what I love just as much is you get to see the depth of George Washington's virtues.
You know, when you told historian Joseph J. Ellis that you were planning to do this book or this project, he warned you how difficult it would be. And yet his praise, and I quote, a true mystery story that very few Americans know, written with a voice that beckons to be heard. This is listed among other praise received from President George H.W. Bush, President Clinton, John Meacham. Did you find the project to be as difficult as he projected?
Of course, because and you know what's hard about it is, and especially because I'm someone who writes fiction, I know that people are going to be looking and scrutinizing it even more. And we were very, you know, there's a moment in the book where one of the people, let me say it this way. When I write a fiction book, if I don't like the way the story's going, I change it. I don't like this character, I kill them. But here we're dealing with George Washington, and it's imperfect information. But rather than making assumptions and saying, you know what, we think this or we think that, there's some times where you're just not going to get the answer you want. There's a moment in the book where they think that George Washington's personal housekeeper, a woman named Mary Smith, is in on the plot, because in the middle of the night, she disappears as the plot is going on. And there will be plenty of historians out there who will tell you she was in on the plot. She was a prostitute. She was trying to poison him. She was trying to kill him. Every theory you want under the sun. she disappeared in the middle of the night. She could have been all those things. She could have just as easily been fired for burning the toast every morning. We have no idea. She just disappears from history, and we never hear from her again. Go put the word Mary Smith in Google. You'll have as much luck finding her. And when we got to that part of the book, we said, listen, nobody knows. She's a giant question mark in this story. We just don't know. She's one of those mysteries that will never be answered. And what I love, though, is I know the same way when we were searching for the 9/11 flag, I know there's someone out there right now who's going to read the book and is going to come to us and say, I'm the great, 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 great granddaughter of Mary Smith, and here's what happened to her. And that's how history always is. It's this great, wonderful cascading game of kind of lined up dominoes. And sometimes they stop falling until someone comes along and gives you another push. And I can't wait for that letter. I can't wait for that phone call.
When speculating on what would have happened if Washington had been killed, you quoted a joke that we might all still be sipping tea. It's quite impossible to predict what might have happened, so I won't ask you to do that. But are there any takeaways we can glean from the actual outcome?
Of course. Listen, do we win the war if George Washington dies? We could or we couldn't. You can argue either way. Do we have a president? Maybe, maybe not. No one knows. But I'll say this. This is where I think our history changes, because I believe that George Washington's greatest accomplishment is not winning the Revolutionary War or becoming the first president. His greatest accomplishment is what he does after the war, because when the war is over, George Washington could have been the king of America. He was so popular, they would have easily voted him king. But instead, George Washington doesn't want that. In fact, after the war, King George says, what's George Washington going to do now that he's won? And the painter Benjamin West supposedly says back to him, he's going home, at which point King George says, if he does that, he'll be the greatest man who ever lived. And that's exactly what George Washington does. And he does it again after his second term. He could have had a third term or a fourth term, but instead he decides to have faith in us as a country, faith in us as a people. And George Washington is not selected to be the first president because he's the smartest guy in the room. There are better scholars. It's not because he's the greatest general. Again, he gets out-generaled over and over again. But the reason we pick him is because he's that man of virtue. I mean, to me, if we lose him, is there anyone else who would walk away from all that power? That, to me, is where American history potentially completely changes.
Are there any other nonfiction projects in your immediate future? Do you have any more rabbit holes through which you'd like to dive?
I do have another one we're working, Josh and I are already working on now, that we've been working on for some time. And the newest one is actually our newest children's book. We do this line of nonfiction children's books of real American heroes for kids and grandkids out there. And that comes out next month in February when we do I Am Billie Jean King. And it's not the Revolutionary War, but the Battle of the Sexes does have some amazing battles in it.
What does George Washington teach us about the culture we're living in today?
You know, one of the scenes that I always go to in the book when I think about George Washington is this moment where we actually get to see what 1776 was like in terms of the country. Because we love to tell the story. We all believed in democracy. We held hands and we defeated the British, the greatest fighting force that ever lived. And it's a great story, but it's not the true story. Do you think America was divided today? In 1776, there were nearly as many loyalists in New York City on the British side as there were patriots on the American side. And in our own military, you had the regiments from Massachusetts were fighting with the regiments from Virginia. A fistfight breaks out in Harvard Yard one day. George Washington himself comes racing forward, leaps off his horse, grabs two of them by the throat, and is basically saying, stop fighting with each other. We're on the same team. And if ever there were a metaphor for where we are today, this is it. And for me, I think one of the things I take away as I study him for this long is in our culture today, when someone disagrees with us, we unfriend and unfollow them. But if you're surrounded by just people who agree with you, you're doing yourself no favors. There was no United States back then. George Washington had to help build it by putting his arms around all these opposing forces and pulling us together. We tend to do this thing today where we say those people, they did this, they did that. If you're Democrat, you hate the Republicans. You're Republican, you hate the Democrats. But as I've been on book tour this past week, I went from CBS to Fox News to NPR, and every newsroom is saying the same thing. There are things we all agree on, despite what everyone thinks, and it's we're tired of being divided as a country. We want to be together. And leaders like George Washington remind us that the best leaders bring us together. They don't pull us apart.
That was Brad Meltzer, co-author of The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington, which was published by Flatiron Books. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. You can discover more episodes at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Lou Ann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.